This podcast is primarily recorded on the traditional territories of the Huron-Wendat and Haudenosaunee peoples, in Cataraqui, or Kingston by its colonial name. We center the rightful stewards of this land in order to unsettle our fight for collective liberation.
Hi, welcome to Queer Muslim Resistance, a podcast from Eau Prairie, Kingston. I'm one of your hosts, Maha, and today I'm so excited to be back with Catherine, a Black sexually fluid Muslim woman and owner of House of Body, spelled B-A-W-D-Y, an online adult novelty store that unapologetically prioritizes the pleasure of BIPOC, queer folks, people of marginalized genders, and all of our community's vibrant intersections. For timing, we've split our conversation up into two episodes, part one and a part two, each with a debriefing segment with me, Taylor, and Nicole. So make sure you listen to part one of our conversation if you haven't already. This week, we hear about Catherine's work on pleasure and sex, and her journey in creating House of Body. And just a quick note, we always have further reading and links to things we reference in the episode description in case you want to take a further look at anything. So now we can get into more on House of Body. So what got you into your line of work? I'd love to hear your journey of creating House of Body, or like explaining to people what it is first, because I named it, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I said before, naming is important. Naming is powerful. So House of Body makes me so excited. So for background, I had been selling adult novelties for about 4 years before House of Body's birth. And I was doing it under a different company. I was represented for a different company. And it was fun. It was definitely a learning experience. And it was also an interesting way to reconcile pleasure in a body that didn't know how much I could also belong to that version of joy and sense of self. Being woman, you're always taught, or femme, period, there's this sense of service that's so very, you know, that's overlying anything we learn, especially in Islam. Like, you're always, there's always like your husband, if that's your deal, your children, your household, your community, your parents, and then maybe you, if you're still awake at the end of the day. Like, so there's that. And then growing up in a family where there was definitely a good period of time where my finances or my ability to work to help the family was incredibly important to our survival, which is a very big word for Black folks, period, especially in this country. We're just doing so much to just survive. That kind of mentality and how much that hurts and how deeply rooted that is feels like the polar opposite of pleasure. So it was interesting to be able to do something that was in stark contrast to what I knew. So that, you know, about 4 years ish, and was able to also connect to queer communities in a really awesome, specific, really fun way. Sex is not foreign to queer communities. It's all over Pride. It's all in conversations. It sometimes it's the first thing people engage in before they start to even reconcile what that means to their souls and their spirits and their feelings and their minds. But like, body, we've got that.
Yeah.
So that was also interesting. But in that whole period of time, and even before that, in just a consumer-based experience, I didn't see Black people that weren't ridiculed, that weren't the butt of some kind of joke, that weren't disrespected, that weren't in some kind of play scenario that really raked at generational traumas. We don't even know how to reconcile now most of the time. And this is in toy industries, this is in porn, this is just on TV in what is essentially soft porn now, like really hyper romantic situations. I never saw me. If we're bringing in Islam, that just no, just I've not seen it, especially from a person that's actually Muslim. I've seen situations, I've seen porn, I've seen all types of things that will play up all of these really hurtful stereotypes and tropes, but the people depicting them are white people, which is more of an insult, where women weren't treated, well, women were treated in a way where our pleasure is a portion of our power. Also not incredibly common. There's more now, there's far more resources for ethical porn or toy companies that will actually make sure that women aren't just like degraded or some kind of vessel for penises to fly around and into. And queerness, again, being some caricature of lesbianism, because that's the palatable queerness, right? That's the fetishized version. All of these things are hurtful, are frustrating. They frankly just piss me off. I'm like, yeah. This is just not how people live their lives. Like, what are you doing? So House of Body was birthed partially in rebellion. And I'm just like, okay, well, I'm gonna be different. So when I was part of the previous company, I started selling to communities that looked like me, sound like me, live like me, but it was also a really, really big deal to educate in that process also. Because I'm like, if this is all people are in contact with, who's having healthy conversations about your health? Who's having mentally healthy conversations about what it means to feel pleasure and be queer? Who is having, who is telling children what their body parts are actually called? And this is for safety and for understanding, you know, who's bridging the gap? There's this very, very ingrained sense of trust for Black folks, I think, period, globally, but definitely in this country where literally everything around us is designed to be of danger or detriment to who we are and anything we want to be. So just because a white doctor gets on the screen and tells us probably factual things, their entire training is built around and for white people. So how much can Black folks trust that? Especially when you're a Black woman going in for birth experiences, pap smears, whatever the case may be, there's so much that's taught about, I mean, just the birth of modern American gynecology was built as the rape and pillaging of Black women's bodies. How are we now supposed to trust that in the future? You know, how are we now supposed to trust it in our present sense? Don't even add in the intersection of being a trans person. Nobody's even trying to respect that you exist, much less belong to your own health, your own sensuality, sexuality, pleasure. These things just, they don't happen in the ways that they should. So if someone that looks like me, sounds like me, even comes close to bridging the gap, how many people am I helping? How many conversations are now happening in someone else's living room because you learned what something is called, what it actually does, how to take care of yourself? How many people's children might I be affecting because instead of, you know, abstinence-only kinds of concepts, we're saying sex feels good, but here's how we are responsible about it. These things are a huge deal to me outside of just toy sales. So I wanted to make sure this was happening. Other folks in my position within that company also wanted to make sure that at the very least the representation was happening and these kinds of ideas were happening during the current socio-political unrest happening in this country. So it's an ideal time to at the very least pretend you're on Black folks' side, which I didn't think was happening as fast as it should have. So instead of getting more frustrated, I decided, well, I can do this myself. I give huge props to my fiance because a whole year before this happened, she was always saying I could do it. She was like, no, this needs to happen. We can build it. It can look like this. You can do this. Like, you need to do this on your own. And I always had some reason why it shouldn't be done, couldn't be done, needs to be considered differently, wasn't the right time, but all that's fear, right? And that's the interesting thing about anger, which I think a lot of people automatically relate to something negatively connotated. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes anger tells you where a boundary is, how to protect yourself. And sometimes anger is an incredible catalyst like nothing else. I got angry. I got up. I did something else. And that something else is House of Body. House of anything is this vibrant nod to the incredible vibrancy and oh my gosh, I forgot the word I'm looking for. We're going to roll with vibrancy of ballroom culture,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not very, very familiar with how it exists internationally, but here, Black people, the underground nature of ballroom culture, drag kings and queens and trans folks being able to belong to themselves in a new, so colorful, so musical, so artistic way is incredible and informs so much of pop culture and yep. people don't even recognize. Like, they're just learning some of it when Pose comes on TV, but like, this was long before Madonna decided to put her white face on really Black shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So that's that house of, I wanted that to be. And then, you know, I think that it's really, really important that when you see yourself and when whatever brand, concept, company is claiming you are allowed to come see yourself here, that there, something of it talks about home. And queer folks, Black folks, Muslim folks, the concept of home can be a really, really hard thing. But if my brand built around pleasure says you can come home here and you believe me, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So that's the house of. Body is spelled B-A-W-D-Y on purpose. One, the dictionary definition is means something raunchy and naughty, and I want to turn that on its head. Okay, so what? If it's naughty and it's raunchy, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's not incredible. And honestly, if we really want to be super real with ourselves, so many people love that underground, shadowy, naughty, raunchy, everything. But you're taught in whatever culture, whatever religion, whatever parentage you're coming from, that you're not supposed to talk about it. You're not supposed to like it. You're not supposed to belong to it. And boom, now we've got underground cultures. Because you're going to do it anyway. Stop it. And then spelt that way on purpose because, and it, I love hearing it every time I hear specifically Black people say House of Body, because there's B-O-D-Y. And technically that's how you would pronounce it. But when Black folks read it, we say it like when we go to a party. When queer Black folks read it, we know it's serving face and body. Yes, honey, work. That immediately... When certain folks read it, I automatically know who can hear themselves in the word.
Yeah.
And like, I've even had people say it before where they draw out, it's like, she owns House of Body. And I'm like, yes, I do, honey.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel so good because that's what I want. I want you to know that this house is built for and by us. And if you automatically, when you walk up to a McDonald's, you know you're getting a burger. When you walk up to a courthouse, you know some bullshit's about to go down. Like, when you see House of Body, you know you belong here. That's a big deal. And then in my research, apparently I learned of the Body Riots, which is kind of a cool fun fact. Apparently, I am probably going to twist up this story, but there were protests and riots that went down in like 16 whatever England about a completely different subject. But of course, people will find any way to come down on sex workers. So they tried to start going around blaming, threatening, torching brothels and harming sex workers. And if there's anybody that is a fierce, shameless hustler on this planet, it's a sex worker. So the prostitutes fought back and boom, body riots.
Wow.
And I think it's awesome. And if there's some aspect of what I do connected to resistance, and so much of it is connected to resistance, I'll take all of it, throw it all in the bucket. So that's just, that's the name by itself, but it's built specifically for and with celebration and prioritization of Black people, of people of color, of queer folks, of people of marginalized genders. And it's built specifically around that pleasure. So when people go onto the website, there are no white hands holding the toys. And that doesn't always seem like a big deal until you recognize that that just doesn't exist anywhere else.
Yeah.
Even when I am product uploading and I'm getting stock photos, every single one of them is a white woman's hand, every single one. And I recently had a friend of mine look at, you know, she was helping me with aspects of the website, and the words she used was shocking. And I was like, whoa, is that a bad shock? Is that a good shock? What are we talking about? But it's this immediate juxtaposition to everything you've ever seen and everything you thought was normal, because you don't recognize that something isn't for you if that's all you've ever experienced in the world. But you log into House of Body and everything is different. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, it's like that cracking open of the world when you realize there's other queer Muslims. It's like, there are Black people that look like they are respected and having fun. There are Spanish speaking folks who are like being represented in a completely different fashion that aren't freaking cleaning anything, but are holding a dildo and having a good time. Like, there's a South Asian, they identify as a hairy non-binary babe. And I love that. One of the models. And I'm just like, there's, I've never seen this. There, during the fashion shoot or the photo shoot for House of Body, there's so many pictures that even I had never seen before, and I'm making it. And I'm asking people to pose in certain ways and do certain things. And then I realize, like, am I asking them to do the things I've always seen? Am I asking them to do something different? And then is there power in asking them to do the things I've always seen? Because people are going to see these certain positions and realize, like, I also feel good this way, and that's okay. And it's gorgeous. So it's sex toy sales with sexual and sensual wellness built into the fabric of it, but it prioritizes people like us on purpose because nothing else is, or very, very few people are. And I don't want it to be done by another white person who feels as though they want to create a corner of their company for us. No, the entire foundation, everything that's been integral to House of Body's birth has been built by a queer person, a Black person, a person of marginalized gender, all three, someone who speaks a different language, everything. When you click a button and your taxes are correct, that is a Dominican woman. When you see the collage of the photos when you first log on to the website, that is a queer Haitian woman. When you see the About Me section and explaining how this place is so beautiful, that's me, a queer, sexually fluid Muslim woman. Nothing of this entire concept was built by someone that doesn't understand who we are. And that's so revolutionary. That's so new. Mm-hmm.
I love that. So as a Black, sexually fluid Muslim woman based in what's colonially called America, why do you think pleasure and pleasure seeking is so important?
I think intersectionality, coined by a Black woman, mm-hmm. as an entire concept.
Yes.
At the core, really speaks to how layered this question is, right? Mm-hmm. It can be answered in a bunch of different ways. One simple way is, why not? Like, Black people, women, queer folks, Muslim folks, whatever, have everything about our history, especially in this country, especially how white people tell our history in this country, starts with pain first, starts with suffering, starts with pillaging, starts with this stripping of sense of self. So if you want to be able to feel pleasure, whether it be reprieve, whether it be rebellion, whether it be just because, why not? Like, you're not built to be in suffering all the time. It's not safe, it's not healthy, it's not sustainable. Why not, right? Which then leads me to, we deserve it, period. Black people have done enough to make sure that someone else lives comfortably, someone else is allowed their pleasure, someone else doesn't even have to think about having these conversations. When does our time happen? And it doesn't unless, you know, we make it so. And then I think that, I mean, maybe deeper than that, Black histories, and like I said, taught by white folks in this country, start with the horrors of being enslaved. Our pleasure is, in one way, its own divinity. It's belonged to us since time didn't need recording. Being able to feel good has been such an integral part of any culture that trying to divorce ourselves from it now or treat it like it's some kind of taboo is also disrespecting your sense of self and history and ancestry. It just is. We deserve a break, deserve a freaking reprieve, a rest, a something. And if that means a few orgasms and you don't burn down the rest of this country, or maybe you do, I'm here for it. then that's what we deserve. My sexual and romantic fluidity is another layer, right? I use it interchangeably with bisexuality because, like, it's shorter. And this gray area that happens is a hard thing to navigate without it feeling good at some point, you know, meaning a lot of bisexual folks deal with this concept of being tainted when you're interacting with other queer folks, and then fetishized when you're interacting with, you know, hetero folks. So I'm like stuck in between. And if I can't belong to a pleasureful version of myself, I'm always within someone else's concept of who I'm not even who I am.
Yeah.
And that's no way to live either. I think sensual pleasure is physical joy. There's this really profound sense of joy when you're talking about spirituality, when you're talking about, you know, Islam for many people, even if it's not the religion in and of itself, there's still really joyous moments of communal activities of that kind of like inherent peace I see from Muslim elders. I'm like, how are you so calm all the time? How? And before you get there, something has to feel visceral here. Something about your sense of self in this moment has to feel like that profound sense of joy is possible. And I totally think an orgasm is that. Like, if that's something that you experience or want. Some people don't want that, don't experience it, don't need it. And just that connection to your physical sense of self or your partner or partner's physical sense of self is divine in its own way, right? Like, as sacrilegious as it may be, like, I know for a fact, whether we talk about it or not, that this beautiful sense of like the universe opening up when you pray happens when you're fucking.
Yeah.
Just gonna say it. Mm-hmm. So it can. Or when you're in a BDSM play session or scene, there's so many people who can understand subspace, but won't understand how a version of that can happen in a really hyper-spiritual moment. Or people in the other way around will tout how vast the universe feels in your chest when you pray. But then when someone says that they find pleasure in pain, pleasure in another person's body that has the same anatomical parts as they do, pleasure in sex when they want it and not when religion tells you it's permissible, they can't relate the two. It's under the same umbrella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like for me personally, growing up as a Muslim, it was enforced by my religious teachers that sex before marriage is the worst thing you can do. So how do you navigate like these narratives of shame in your work?
I think that shame is the word, right? One, I'm incredibly grateful because I understand I'm speaking from a privileged position where shame wasn't quite taught in the ways in my household, with my mother specifically, that it is in other people's. So I'm so, so, so grateful for that because I don't know that I could do this in quite the same way or as soon as I am, maybe after I like work through some shit. But as soon as I am, if I didn't feel like I am allowed, right? And my mom always made me feel like I'm allowed, but we're going to learn, but we're going to be responsible, but we're going to understand, but we're not going to do it in secrecy. And that's important. However, I recognize that shame amongst Black people, shame amongst Muslim folks is something that is layered to be respected and informs a lot of what we do, how we operate, and why we do it, even if it's not something that's cognizantly happening. And it starts so young, right? There's actions and lessons taught in children that are commonplace, and they don't always show up as a "you shouldn't" as they do in Islam, right? It's very clear, like, you give anybody a pulpit and these are the things that should not happen, period. But when you take it outside of religion, it shows up like jokes. It shows up like secrets, you know? It shows up like things people whisper about instead of speaking out loud about. It shows up in ways that even, I mean, think about the last time you ever saw somebody just hand a hygiene product to somebody in public. Like, that's how those things, it's not saying, oh, you shouldn't, because a lot of people have never actually heard that sentence when we're talking about passing a pad across the room. But because you have to walk up super, super close to somebody, slide it in a pocket like something illegal is happening, you're now taught in that way. And that's how those things show up. And when that happens, it's so nuanced, but it grows in such a way that by the time you're older, you don't realize that that was shame manifesting. And so you teach it or you operate in it, and it's normal. Mm-hmm. So recognizing all those tiny little things is really important, because I think in this day and age, especially with a lot of millennial and Gen Z folks, they realize that these big touted concepts of shame aren't okay. But we also haven't gotten all the way down to the roots yet, right? Things that we call weird. That is my least favorite word. Whenever I do home parties or whenever I'm talking to somebody, for people of marginalized gender specifically, I cut the concept of apology. Nope. You don't have to say, "I'm sorry, I just have a question." One, especially for women, it's a way to make sure that, like, we're not heard in whatever situation that we're in. And if you're not heard in with just your voice, imagine how much you're muting your body. And then weirdness automatically makes somebody think that there's something wrong with what's happening. Oh, I know it's odd. Oh, I know it's different, but I kind of like it. Now you've already separated your concepts of what's traditional, normal, accepted, good, and you. And you don't want to separate those two. And weird absolutely does that. White is another thing that people roll into things. For Black people, and, like, pardon the language, but, like, it's super, super common. I'm not really sure globally, but especially here, for people to hear about different things that happen within BDSM culture, especially underground BDSM cultures, or different sensual and sexual experimentations that aren't what we consider mainstream, and immediately be like, oh, that's white people shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's pleasurable things. And if you're doing it healthily, like, now you're automatically relating this concept of being creative or feeling good or doing something that doesn't necessarily have to be what everybody else is doing to white people. And if there's anybody on the planet that is proud to do something everybody else isn't doing, because that's what creates culture, it's not white people. So, and so, like, it's to have to learn to divorce those two is a conversation I also have often. Like, and then who is shame helping, right? And if people stop talking about shame as a blame thing, like, you're doing this and this is why, and this is why you should stop, that's how so many other lessons are taught in your life. But if you flip it and you're just like, you feel like this is weird, you feel like this is, quote, white people shit, who is that helping? And just let that question sit. And sometimes people are like, well, I mean, I guess I'm not really sure. I'm like, exactly. You were not someone on that list. When I said, who is it helping? You didn't say you. You didn't say your children. You didn't say your partner or partners, which is another layer for people. Having multiple partners is, again, supposed to be something that's really white. And I'm like, actually, that's a very Black people thing to do historically and responsibly. But step one has always been recognizing what it is, naming it, but being gentle with someone else and myself. Like, there's still things that I'm working through and realizing that, like, you inherited that from somewhere. It's not your fault, but you don't have to keep passing it on. Like, it's not a cold. We can do something about it. You can't just say stop and expect people to, like, all of a sudden love themselves differently. You don't fall in love in one day. You can't fall out of shame in one day. But you can still make it a regular part of conversation. And then I also try to make sex and pleasure not only this really sterile medical conversation, but also colloquial in a way that a serious topic is taken seriously, or taken lightly enough to be considered seriously, right? Like this concept of, like, edutainment. I'm not, like, dancing and jumping around or anything, but I need to be able to talk to you like we talk about anything and not necessarily throw a bunch of medical terms at you. Like, do I know them? Well, I throw them in there. Do I need to make sure you understand what's what? Yes. But when you go to the doctor, that's what you hear. And we just talked about trusted Black people. So I can't do the same thing. You're not listening to me. You're relating it to traumas that you're absolutely justified in having.
Yeah.
But if I'm speaking to you and speaking about sex and speaking about pleasure in a way that we talk about music, in a way that we talk about, you know, not something so colloquial as, like, pancakes, but definitely something that still belongs to us culturally, right? Music does, words do, media does. So if we can get in a super heated conversation about whatever show we just watched and be passionate and dissect it, we can do with sex in the same ways, but it has to sound like you can. And I purposely make sure, I think that's the biggest way I try to make sure that I navigate shame, is that I show you what it can look like and can sound like. I try not to divorce myself from the same concept I'm telling everybody else they can belong to. Because if you look at me and you see some aspect of you in, wow, she's really loud talking about pussy, like, it's not a secret, really? Mm-hmm. Or wow, she knows X, Y, and Z in a medical sense, but, like, I never thought of it that way. Or I didn't know that I had this body part, or I didn't know what it necessarily did. And she sounds so comfortable. Or she sounds so happy. A lot of people have told me that before. You sound really happy talking about this. I'm like, sex is awesome. Or, you know, I'll be at events and people will walk up to my table and they're like, oh, wow. And they'll see the toys and they're like, this is that wide eyes and what is that? What's going on here? And then they always ask, how are you? Right. And that's my first intro to flip this entire conversation. If I say, how are you? Most people are like, I'm good. Whether you mean it or not, it's just become the standard phrase, right? If you ask me, how am I at an event where all of my wares are out on this bright red tablecloth, I'm going to tell you I'm the happiest person in the room. I've got the dildo table. Why wouldn't I be? And people are like, yeah, okay. And now we're talking about it. Because they're like, oh, okay, well, what's this do? I need to make it comfortable.
Yeah.
In a way that also feels personal.
What would you like any listening queer Muslims to take away from your stories?
That I'm not a monolith and therefore neither are you. I'm not the title piece of something that's only about me.
Mm-hmm.
You exist and I exist and we exist. And that is the version of normal that people want us to not believe is true. That your sense of pleasure and sexual belonging and sensual belonging can look just like Islam shifts in any way you need it to, so long as you're being consensual and responsible with yourself and with other people, right? I think that queer Muslims, queer Black Muslims very specifically, need to know that we're here and it's okay, and not just okay, but, like, you're allowed to feel good in it also. Just the transition from what you know to what you realize to trying to reconcile what you know and what you realize is hard and frustrating, and there's so many teary nights a lot of us have had. Why not believe that there's, I mean, all pun intended, like, joy at the end of your rainbow?
Yeah.
Why not? And I think that for what I do, sex and pleasure can be that. And sometimes it doesn't have to look like what you think sex can look like, in the same way that Islam didn't look like what you thought Islam was supposed to look like, in the same way blackness didn't look like what I thought it was supposed to look like. All of these things can morph and form in a way that makes you feel good. At the base of it all, everybody just wants to feel good, whatever good means. So I think that that's one thing I want queer Muslims to understand, that just because you've gone through this whole journey or are going through this own journey doesn't mean that it has to hurt all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Where can folks find you or House of Body?
So House of Body's website is currently in development, and we are aiming to launch for November 27th, which is Black Friday here in the States, because capitalism's a thing and we got to keep paying and keep it going. So it's launching November 27th. We have a big old launch situation. It's super exciting. And that's House of Body, HouseOfBody.com. Same way on Facebook, House of Body. Same way on Instagram, House of Body. And on both of those platforms, there's not just, hey, look at this toy. Like, because Facebook and Instagram algorithms are messed up and they're always muting sex workers and sex and pleasure and all of those things, there's actually not a whole lot of toys. So you kind of come to the website for the good stuff. But there is educational things. There are model intros right now. All the models from the website, they're being like blasted. There's a contest going on right now. There's all these fun things that you can learn about on social media. But the purchasing and the exploration, and if you want to see what that shocking and jarring feeling is like in such a dope way, that's houseofbody.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been such a wonderful conversation.
I'm so happy it happened. Yeah. I think it's just, it's one of the many cherries on top, I'm sure, coming in my future of just trying to reconcile these aspects of myself. Like, when you invited me to have this conversation, I'm like, somebody actually wants to talk about everything that I've been like struggling or working with. And it feels so good to be in a sense of self now where I can actually have this conversation. And I'm like, this is incredible. And to do it with sex toys as like also a theme.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Just a whole lot of awesome shit.
Whole lot of it.
Hey, Taylor and Nicole.
Hi.
Hi.
So, any thoughts on Catherine's episode or the second part of Catherine's conversation with me?
I found it really interesting. I wrote some notes when I listened to the first episode, and I really liked the concept of talking about Earth as, like, this Earth where we are right now as being hell. And then you talked about it too, and I was like, because I've always kind of, that's been sort of my only way to sort of think about it, is like, this Earth is kind of like hell. I don't think that there's another way to think about it, but it just like, it kind of messed me up, because then in my brain, like, I don't really believe in heaven or hell afterwards, because I think that you come back. I don't really understand how that is. So it was kind of a weird thing to reconcile in my own brain as like, this is hell. How do you make it better? But yeah.
Oh, we can have so many conversations about how I think Earth is hell. And I also believe in reincarnation, let me tell you. So, Nicole, one day you and I.
Yeah, no, I would really like to. And then I think it was something that she said, I think it was in the second part, where she was talking about anger as a catalyst. And that was like one of my favorite things that she had said, because I think that anger is like one of the most important catalysts to like for movements as well. So I enjoyed that she was talking about my cat again. I'm sorry, she's just never happy.
I think it's so interesting how both of you really resonate with that idea of Earth being hell or hell-like, because to me, like, I can understand why people might find comfort in that, or at least find some sort of justification for the why things are so shitty. But to me, I don't know, I feel like we have the potential to have so much We have the potential to rebuild and exist in all the ways we dream of without the burdens of like all the shitty systems that harm us, because we're built to thrive in relation with each other. And when we center that in the ways that we live and learn and resist, then think of the beauty in living and dreaming for this earth beyond our conceptions of it in the here and now. Like, think of how this earth can be a place of pleasure and healing because resistance is inevitable. Like, it doesn't always have to be hell-like.
I guess the way that I kind of looked at it when I heard both Taylor and Catherine talking about it was that, like, I don't think that these things would be happening from like an all-loving, like benevolent thing. I think that these are like, this is a version of hell, but you can change that, mm-hmm. right? Because for me, I don't really like, there's nothing to say that something happens after this. So if this is hell, then like, why can't we work to make it better? Like, if this is all that we have, this is fucking hell for some people. Like, this is horrible. So why not try and make it better? Do you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. I imagine those futures and I'm like, so are we in hell now? Mm-hmm. Is this like how we get out of this? Because to me, your community is almost more of God and stuff like that. And so like, if you move forward, maybe you can change it. But that's kind of just mm-hmm. how I conceptualize it.
Yeah. Like, I understand, as long as we're not getting trapped in like, this is hell and everything's going to be bad forever. Right. I feel like that's not productive. And not in a capitalist sense, but in a sense, in a mobilizing sense.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I heard this story about what heaven and hell is like. I don't know where I heard this story from, but this is the story. So essentially, in both heaven and hell, you have this giant table with all the food and everyone sitting at the table. And you can eat as much as you like. Did you hear this, Nicole? But the forks, the utensils are ginormous, right?
And you have to feed each other.
Right. So in heaven, everyone helps each other eat with these ginormous utensils so everyone can eat and be happy and everything is bountiful. In hell, it's torturous because no one can eat and no one helps each other eat. So the situations are the exact same, but it's how we work with each other or don't work with each other that will impact either how, if we suffer, or if we don't suffer. And I think that's kind of what I go with when I think about Earth, the possibility, well, Earth being hell. And that's also why I go back to us having free will and choice and stuff like that, because it's sort of our ability to help the other person, to be you know, a steward and make this earth a better experience for all, and yet not doing that, you know. And that's why it is mm-hmm. I see it in some ways as hell. But in this half of the episode, Catherine talked so much about sex and pleasure and bodies, okay? And I was just enjoying it and living for it. And I know all of us have had many, many discussions about sex and sex toys and pleasure. And so I wanted to get your feel, both of you, Nicole and Maha.
I wrote something down because I have never thought about this, and I don't know if it's something that you guys have, but Catherine was talking about like when you're fucking or like you're doing a BDSM scene, and you go into a subspace, mm-hmm. and that being close to like kind of talking to God, mm-hmm. And like, I know that space, but I've never felt that in talking to God. And I think that was like one of the most relatable things I've ever heard in trying to understand mm-hmm. what it's like to sort of get out of my own head and out of thinking that like I'm the only thing, and sort of like understanding other things, like understanding that in relation to subspace, like mm-hmm. in very controlled situations, was like, it was just very eye-opening to me. And I've never and it's obviously probably because I don't speak to God, but I've never thought of that. And I was just wondering mm-hmm. if it was something that either of you had a thought of, or if it like kind of resonated with you when Catherine had said it.
I just wanted to know what a subspace is. I wasn't quite sure what that is necessarily. Maybe Nicole can explain it, or
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, by sub, so okay, this is going to be kind of like descriptive. Have you ever been like choked, like if you're into choking consensually, and then you kind of, it gets you out of your own head and you're kind of just spacey? Like that is what subspace is like, because you get so submissive that you're able to sort of give up that control to whoever's doming you or like whatever scene you're in. And it just kind of feels nice and floaty. That's my understanding. Like that's how I feel when I go into subspaces, but it's also like very particular. I don't know. It's just like this very floaty, like it's kind of like when you get really high. And you
just, I was just gonna ask, yeah.
Close your body, or like close your eyes, and you're like, whoa. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
Okay. So then I get it. I feel that, you know. I think now I can understand a little bit better, at least religiously speaking, when you talk to God, feeling that I cry all the time, okay? I cry all the time. Anytime I'm praying, I usually get really overwhelmed because I feel so, I don't know, I've never described it as a subspace, but it's feeling like the vastness of everything, of the world, of the universe, and feeling at the same time comforted that you're not alone. These are the feelings that come up for me when I pray, and why it can be such an overwhelming feeling. And it was quite interesting thinking about how sex and pleasure in so many different ways can bring up a lot of these feelings for people. And maybe you can explain that a little bit more, Nicole, or at least how you made sense of that connection.
Like in terms of how being in that space like helps me. Do you mind just sort of reframing that? Sorry.
I guess I'm just trying to understand, or maybe get a sense of how, like what being in that subspace when in a pleasurable, like sex or erotic, and I'm using erotic talking about sex here, moment, as opposed, because I've never really thought about it that way, whereas you'd never thought about it in terms of like a prayerful way, I've never thought about it in terms of sex,
yeah, and
those intimate relationships.
Well, and it's one of those things, like for me specifically, I only like going into that sort of space is something that I only do when I'm very comfortable with somebody, and like when it's something that I really need, because it makes me feel vulnerable. And it does, it makes you very vulnerable, right, to the person who's there. And I think that that's definitely how prayer feels, like you feel vulnerable to God, right? Like you're bearing like a lot of who you are, and like you are giving up that control to somebody, like obviously in a sexual sense with like, you know, like certain like words and things like that, that are like predetermined. But like, you're still giving that bit up and letting somebody else just like sort of be able to take the reins. That's how I feel about it. And I think that that is probably very similar to how prayer can feel.
I feel like we would have such an interesting discussion if any one of us was familiar with Sufism. I am not.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. The other thing to go off of this that Catherine said, that was very interesting, was like our pleasure in itself is our own divinity. And I was like, damn, okay. That's true, like, that is, yeah.
Yeah.
I love when people have these discussions about pleasure, in terms of the divine, and our how folk understanding the power of pleasure in our relationships, in what we do, and how it motivates us, can bring us closer to why we seek the divine, you know, like mm-hmm. the whole idea of heaven and hell, this idea of earthly pleasure versus heavenly pleasure, is something that religion really tries to take hold of, mm-hmm. this desire to feel good and to want to feel good and be happy mm-hmm. in your body, in yourself, is so rooted in how we understand who we are as human beings mm-hmm. and how we make sense of what we do with ourselves, in our community, the relationships that we build. Mm-hmm. And it hit me hard when Catherine said, no person, no soul can survive on just suffering and pain. Mm-hmm. It's not possible. We are not built for that.
Mm-hmm.
You exactly. know?
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of something that we were talking about earlier, Taylor, mm-hmm. In terms of like extending that conversation on pleasure to include pleasure beyond sex and beyond sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure in using Audre Lorde's The Erotic,
right.
which your research is, well, Audre Lorde's work is foundational to your master's research.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about how, well, Catherine talked about how shame is taught and practiced in our actions and in the way we interact with each other. And I feel like on the flip side, love, and not just love, but liberation and mm-hmm. joy and pleasure are taught in the interactions that we have with other people
mm-hmm.
and are experienced in the interactions that we have with other people. So do you want to just speak on that a little bit more?
Yeah, so exactly, I think exactly what we've been touching on, the fact that, and exactly what Catherine said, the fact that pleasure is so central
mm-hmm.
to mm-hmm. how we make sense of our lives. And Audre Lorde, I'm fascinated by Audre Lorde's work in The Erotic, because for Audre Lorde, The Erotic is pleasure. It is sharing pleasure and joy and feeling good, but it's so not just sex. It so goes beyond just what we think about when it terms, and she calls it, Audre Lorde calls it the pornographic. So this obscene, just using people's body, using your body just for sexual gratification, and not honoring the act of pleasure, not honoring the act of pursuing pleasure in yourself and in another person. That's sort of what The Erotic really tries to center on. And my research and my work tries to extend from this space of seeking pleasure in another person and in yourself as a site that is a site of learning, a site of finding yourself and your community and doing work that matters to you, that feels good in your spirit, in your soul. And that goes so much beyond sex. Sex is included in it, like 100%. But we don't talk about pleasure when it comes to the relationships we build. We don't talk about pleasure when it comes to why we get up every morning to do a certain job, or why we hate getting up every morning to do a certain job. It's, you know, maybe we can blame neoliberalism, maybe we can blame capitalism, maybe we can blame it all, but we are so conditioned to separate pleasure and feeling good in ourselves and in our body with sex, and only sex, and only you, and only sexual gratification, that shame gets circled in sex mm-hmm. and in pleasure, so that you can't even talk about pleasure without detaching it from sex, but also saying that sex is a part of pleasure and pleasure mm-hmm. is a part of sex. And so you're not detaching it to say that sex isn't important, but you're extending it beyond sex.
Yeah,
you're extending absolutely. It beyond the pornographic. And I love that Catherine's her store, House of Body, emphasizes, like, look, it's not just, yes, it's about the sex toys, yes, but it's also about health and wellness and sensuality and feeling good and mm-hmm. seeing yourself mm-hmm. in these products and knowing that this is important. It's important to love your body and to find expression and pleasure in these journeys.
Mm-hmm. And also, like when she said, like, cutting out the word weird, Like, I loved that, where she was just like, no, like, it's not weird. It's your body and you enjoy that. Like, that's fine, because putting, like, that is, you're putting shame in something that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. Find the pleasure in that. And I agree with you, Taylor. Like, I guess that's kind of life. Like, you should find, like, pleasure in your work. You should find pleasure in, like, the people you're around. Like, mm-hmm. you should just be pleased.
We're so conditioned. We are so conditioned to think if you're not, you kind of just have to make do. You kind of just have to deal with what you have, you know, hustle it out type thing. And yeah, sometimes you have to hustle it out. But everything that we do as humans is to satisfy our desires mm-hmm. to be with one another, to feel happy, to feel mm-hmm. fulfilled, you know, to develop strong, healthy relationships. These are all pleasurable moments. We are seeking mm-hmm. pleasure in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And that is also how I think about our relationship with the divine. That's mm-hmm. also how I think about why people, you know, are so fervent on, and will often tell you, ignore pleasure, earthly pleasure for heavenly pleasure. Because, you know, to control you, to mm-hmm. control your actions, to control and to make you feel guilty for wanting to seek pleasure, you have to detach one pleasure from another. You have to say, well, it doesn't count if it's sex, but it counts if it's, you know, talking to God, right? Because you can find pleasure in both scenarios, but mm-hmm. only one is so heavenly stigmatized in terms of only appropriate in this certain aspect.
Mm-hmm. Because there's so much power that comes with pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Just basically not being miserable. Like, yeah. it's nice to not be miserable. The amount of energy you have when mm-hmm. you're not miserable, or like you're able to just be like, you know what, fuck it, I love this thing, this is great, this is who I am, like, you become so powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're not allowed to feel pleasure in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I checked out Catherine's website. I mean, I listened after and was like, oh yes, it is under construction. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I'm excited.
Oh my gosh, it was like a painful tease. I was telling Maha, I'm like, this is so frustrating. I just want to visit the website now.
It was like, what's the password? And I was like, I want to know. I want to feel special. I want to get in.
November 27th, y'all.
November 27th. We all going to be on that website. Yeah. Like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the representation we need.
Thanks for listening to the second half of our episode featuring Catherine. You can listen to the first half of our conversation to get to know more about Catherine's experiences as a queer Black Muslim woman growing up in a Nation of Islam family in our previous episode. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Queer Muslim Resistance and listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anchor.fm/Queer Muslim Resistance. Thank you.